Well, I want to begin this morning with the question, why look forward? Now, I realize at one level you could say, well, there's obvious answers. I need to look forward because that's what I do in order to do my job. I have to look forward to the things I have, the deadlines, the projects, the whatever. Or because I have to in order to care for my family, right? I mean, the kids don't just get to school by themselves. Don't we know it? Personally, I'm totally dreading tomorrow because we have been like foolish parents who allow our children to stay up late and have fun, where we should have been ogres and mean and made them go to bed early. Because tomorrow we will reap the whirlwind. Because where they've been getting up at 8 or 9, we will go in and wake them at 6:30, and then they will weep and wail and gnash their teeth. Some of us even think we need to look ahead because we need to know what we're going to have for dinner tonight, right? There's all sorts of questions that we have about what it means to look forward and why it feels like a necessity. But why, especially in terms of our spiritual lives, should we look forward? My answer this morning is because as followers of Jesus, we are headed somewhere. We, those of us who are enamored with, who are committed to, who are following, who are looking to Jesus for our lead, we are going somewhere. There is a destination. We're not static. And we look forward and are called forward by God because we are on a journey and we're headed to a place where that journey will finally end. One of the last letters in the New Testament, the second letter of Peter, written as a general letter to all the churches of people who are following Jesus, puts it this way, and this is written in your program and should be on the screen. But in keeping with his promise, we are looking forward to a new heaven and a new earth, the home of righteousness. The promise that the author alludes to is that this world, earth, is not our final home, but that we will end in a place that is with God, a home with God. At the time this letter was written, there was a much deeper sense that that day was coming, that it was immediate. I think, actually, especially in the more developed countries and worlds, that sense is much more distant. There's a much deeper sense of comfortability and containment, and we don't sense that. And actually, there may be parts of us that don't even yearn for that because we like or experience some joy in this life. I'm pretty convinced that those who've had a pretty rough time their whole lives and suffer and struggle are really looking forward to and embrace this promise in a much deeper way. And while the immediacy is not as strong today, and we don't even know when it's going to happen, the promise of it is still as real as it was then. And the power of it to motivate us in the way we think about our lives is still true today. Steve Jobs, the founder of Apple, not someone who identified himself as a follower of Jesus, understood this and said as much in his commencement address at Stanford University. Let me read this for you. No one wants to die. Even people who want to go to heaven don't want to die to get there. And yet death is the destination we all share. No one has ever escaped it, and that is how it should be, because death is very likely the single best invention of life. It is life's change agent. It clears out the old to make way for the new. Now clearly, Steve has part of the story. He understands that there is death, and he understands that there is a motivational factor in it. What he doesn't take into account is that there's something beyond it, or that there's something actually to look forward to, and not only look forward to, but actually that is transforming us now in preparation for that time. The author of 2 Peter goes on to urge the reader to make every effort to live a life responsive to God, where your life lines up with the teachings of Jesus. That what's clear about this life is that we are being prepared for that eternal destiny. We are being prepared for what comes after death. The point being that if God is promising his followers a new heaven and a new earth in the life after this one, that reaching that end will involve our participation and activity. And I think we need to understand that anew today. That this is not something that we're just waiting to happen, that we're not just kicking back, but that Jesus is inviting us in order for us to experience even greater joy and fulfillment in life into participation with him in that journey towards that new heaven and new earth. The promise is true for us today, and not just for the life that is to come, but even for this coming year. Another New Testament writer, the Apostle Paul, talks about this in a letter called to the people living in Philippi, called the Philippians. In chapter 1, verse 6, he says, I am confident of this, that the one who began a good work among you will bring it to completion by the day of Jesus Christ. The truth for every single person in this room this morning is that Jesus is at work and is present in our lives. Whether we acknowledge him, whether we know him, or whether we claim to follow him, Jesus is present and at work in our lives. That is the conviction of those of us who follow Jesus, that he is at work. And whether you've been following Jesus for as long as you can remember or 5 minutes, Jesus is present in your life. And to that degree, we welcome the work and we reflect on it so that we can see what God is doing in our lives, so that we can participate in that. The promise here is that Jesus will bring the work to completion. For how many people here this morning, and you could raise your hand, does the word completion just make you feel all warm inside? Oh, it's only halfway. Raise them high. Come on. Who likes completion? Okay, only about half of you. Other people just like it open-ended, like whatever. Right? You know? I get that. We're all different. I love completion. You might ask, then why are you a minister? Right? Because there's almost nothing that's ever completed, right? In life with us, don't you find that that's actually true for all of us? How many things in your life feel completed? Can you just start ticking them off in your head, the things that feel undone? Now, what about yourself? How many things in your life feel undone? What about your character? What about your kindness? What about your compassion? What about your charity? What about your forgiveness? Do we not find that we are all yearning for a deeper level of completion, of wholeness, of reality of those experiences in our lives? And we are not done, not by a long way. But the promise of Jesus, the promise of God that is so rich and so deep, is that this work that God is doing in us will be brought to completion. It is a promise of hope, a promise of joy, a promise that is worth giving yourself to. Because deep inside, we all yearn for more of that. We yearn to be like that. Here is Jesus promising us that the good work, his work in our lives, will be completed either by the time that Jesus comes back or by the time that we die and go to meet with him. This implies that the good work he is doing in our lives is an ongoing process. Meaning, should we choose to look back over the past year, we will be able to see progress and movement of the good work. It is not intended to look back and see all the ways that we have fallen short. We know we will see those. But in seeing those, we don't look at those and then condemn ourselves for all the ways we have not completed these things. But we ask, Jesus, what are you doing this year anew to help me become more like you? That my life would look more like you. Meaning, sorry, and should we choose to look forward to this coming year, asking God what he is doing to complete that work, and would like us to partner with him during the coming year, we too will be able to see the progress and movement of that good work at the end of this coming year. So the hope here is that we look back on this year and we see some of these things, and then we look forward and we start to listen to God and we wonder, what are the things that you desire that we would give our attention to and partner with you? And then we come back in maybe 6 months or a year and we look and we see what's been happening. And undoubtedly, half of the things will be like, wow, I forgot I even thought that. And then the others will be, wow, but this one thing, something really happened here. I really saw God work. I shared about that last week. I shared how when we hired R. Penny Hart as our children's director, I realized, wow, I'd gotten through the whole year and I'd forgotten that happened. Why? Because like all of us, we move on to the next thing, right? The next need, the next humongous problem we have to face. And the act of looking back, but even recording now, our desires, our longings, our hopes, and even how we intend to partner with God is critical. So how is God asking you to trust him this year in 2013? What is God asking you to trust him for in this year as a part of your journey with him? I want to ask you to get the insert out again. This is the other insert, not the safety insert, but the insert called Looking Forward 2013. Does everyone here have a program and get one coming in? If you didn't, Could you raise your hand? Because I'd love you to have one so that you have a hard copy of the questions. And also, could you also raise your hand if you didn't get a pen or you don't have a pen and would like one? Because in a few minutes, I'm going to give you some time to reflect and pray. Is there anyone here who doesn't have a program or a pen? Please raise your hand. Young Master Aubin has his hand raised. There's one right here. Two. Do I hear three? Three, three, four, four. Give me five, five. Okay, all right. Most of the front page is a list of questions, and on the back it continues, and there are a few passages for your reflection. The point here with these questions is I certainly don't intend to limit you or even use these questions if you don't want to, but the point is to engage with Jesus and to make space to consider the work he's doing in your life. Before we take a few minutes to reflect, let me just mention three things about these questions. First, the first five or six questions are worded to help us look at the year through the lens of the mission God has given us as a church. So the first five or six questions, they have to do with the mission that God has given us to receive, respond, and risk so that the transforming love of Jesus can be experienced by the communities of the Silicon Valley. We believe that we have received this as a community, and thus I believe that some part of our reflection, looking back and then going forward, needs to be about the mission that God has given us. So these questions set us up to do that. Second, the rest of the questions are intended to be a guide and not a test. You do not need to answer them all. You may want to add some of your own. The point, the key, is that you be intentional about this coming year, what you're hearing from God, and what you want to put energy towards. This is completely different than a resolution, right? A New Year's resolution. I was actually wrong. I made some quotes on statistics last year. I think it was actually like 45% of people make New Year's resolutions and 8% keep them is the actual stat. Some incredible. And the reason for that is when we make a resolution, it's often made on the assumption that now I'm going to gut it out. I'm going to rise up and I'm going to make this thing happen. And what we find when we do that is we often fail. The invitation this morning is not to gut it out, rise up and make it happen, but it is to partner with Jesus. It is to invite his presence, to invite and follow him, but draw upon his energy and his hope in order to press into these areas and see where he's at work. Thirdly and finally, notice that not all the answers need to be spiritual ones. Our lives involve a million actions and decisions every year that are not specifically spiritual acts, right? For example, wanting or needing to get out of debt. That itself, that is not like, will I pray every day? Or will I go to church? Or will I be generous with my money? It is a question of just how you're living your life financially. Yet how we pursue that involves our spiritual lives. It raises issues of trust in God's provision, our identity and its connection to money. It's how we feel about ourselves. We all have some kind of relationship with money. And to some greater or lesser degree, God is a part of that. For some of us, because of confidence or fear, God is in no part connected to money. That it's just, hey, money's my domain. God, take care of Sunday. I got the money. For others of us, we're deeply trusting, and it's caused us to be very free and generous with our money. We need to understand and engage that and allow God to speak to us about that. This may be your biggest triumph of the year, would be to get out of debt. Because it would involve a way that you were trusting in Jesus and growing and becoming more like him and being prepared for that person that Jesus is creating you for in the kingdom of God to complete the good work. So similar to last week, I want to give you a few minutes to begin the interaction with Jesus using these questions. For those of you who do not identify as followers of Jesus this morning, I encourage you to use the questions. Think about your own life. And if you want, think about asking Jesus what he would say to you about your life and see if he says anything. Perhaps begin by reading through the questions slowly and asking Jesus, does he want you to stop on one? You may spend the entire time thinking about one question. You may read through all of them. My hope is that this is just the beginning. This is just a taste of a larger time for you to think about these things. But I want it to start now. So I'm going to put a lot of little music in the background. I'm going to pray for us, and then I'm going to release us to a time to sit where we are and to read over and to reflect and think about the days ahead. Jesus, come. We believe that you speak actively in our midst and in our lives now. And so I ask you to come, work through these questions and the questions that you put on our hearts, and speak. Come, Holy Spirit. As I bring this time of reflection to a close, I don't know whether that time was long for you or short, but I encourage you to press into that reflection and make some space to continue this, whether it be at lunch with some friends after church or on your own. But to not just have it end here, but allow this to be the beginning. One of the things I wanted to share with you is some of the things that have been stirring in me and in us as a staff team and as we as a church move into 2013. And one of those is really an upcoming church move, we hope. A year ago, I mentioned in this very sermon that we were beginning a process in earnest of thinking about our location. One of the things you may realize as you look around this room is that it's both becoming more crowded, which is a good thing, and sometimes it's a little hard to move around, and we wanted a better place for Sunday morning. And we had many conversations about that, as well as the larger needs of our facilities in our church, and we were talking about that. And then it came to this fall, and we discovered that the library, the auditorium right here at Coverly, that we used to meet in, is becoming available somewhere in the spring, summer of 2013. And so we decided to at least put on hold our immediate larger picture discussion in order to see about moving back into the auditorium in that time. We hope that that will happen. We're first on the list. We don't know if they'll ever complete the Mitchell Park Library, and the city of Palo Alto isn't sure either, but we hope that it is soon, and so we ask you to pray for that. The starting of this new location fund with the $30,000 overage from 2012 will be used possibly in some ways to help us move in and improve along with the city what we need to have happen there if we're allowed to move back in there. But the bulk of it will be used probably for a larger discussion about where we see ourselves going in the future. The second thing that I want to tell you about is that this Lent, we're going to do something a little different in that those 40 days, we're going to do something called a leap of faith. And in that, what we're going to do is we're going to spend those days as a church and as individuals trying to grow in our general sense of faith and hope and expectancy of God. And we're going to do that by thinking about some specific areas of our lives and the lives of those around us and of us as a church. There'll be more details about that in the days to come, but I'm excited about this and looking forward to it and in us doing it together as a church. The third and final thing I wanted to share this morning is that as a staff team and the all-church weekend core team debriefed our all-church weekend. For those of you who weren't able to go, it was our first weekend retreat as a church, as a family. We kids and adults went in. It was a great time, and in the process of discussing that, we had initially planned to have that and alternate every other year. But due to the momentum that we felt from that event, we decided to repeat it again next fall. So we'll have the all-church weekend again next fall, and then we will begin a rotation where we'll have an all-church weekend one fall, and then a men's and a women's retreat the next fall, and then alternate every year from there on out. But I'd like to say to you now, if that was an event that was meaningful to you, you'd like to participate in that, we're going to begin even early registration for that because we want to be able to tell the camp. I mean, we actually had more people that wanted to come than we had space to offer, and we're trying to avoid that this year. I want to invite all of you to even come and put that on your calendars now. The exact date is in the program under the section marked events. Upcoming events for 2013, along with some other important events that you may want to know about. As you can see, there are already a few things for us to trust God for as a body as we move into the new year. These are just a few, and just a few of the ones we know about. I'm sure there will be more. The joy that is to be found in these areas is that in that journey is one where God is transforming us, not just as individuals, but as a community. as a church, and not just transforming us as individuals and as a church, but is actually influencing and establishing his kingdom in the area in which we live. And it's our joy to be a part of that and to experience more of that. So I encourage us, let's press on into this new year with the hope of seeing more of that transformation for ourselves, whether it's as individuals or a church, but also for the places we work, the places we go to school, the places we shop, and where we live. I cannot think of a better way for us to end the service this morning, or at least my sermon, not the service, and begin our new year than by taking communion. Communion, for those of you not familiar, is a celebration of the last time that Jesus and his disciples were together when he performed this act by breaking bread and pouring wine and telling them that this was his body and blood that would be broken for them so that they could have life with God forever. They had no idea what he was talking about at the time because he had not yet been killed and risen from the dead, but they would, and they would make this act and this symbol of remembrance a deep part of the Christian faith and tradition. And we'll do that again in a few minutes. But before we do, I want us to remember someone else this morning. Many of you here this morning remember Mark Brierley. This is a picture of Mark. Mark died 5 years ago on this day at the age of 37. I remember the day. Many of you here probably do. Those of you that are new probably don't. But I do. I remember we were in church. And I remember the pastor said Mark had gone to the hospital, but he was probably going to be okay. And in a matter of hours, he was gone. On my desk, I have a picture from the memorial for Mark. I have his picture along with a number of other friends who are my heroes of faith, some of whom have died too young in their lives and others who have passed on who lived rich, full lives. But I have their picture there to remind me of one thing, to remind me of how they lived and to remind me that the time we have is not a given. That what we anticipate our lives might be like and how long they might be is in no way a known quantity. That we have what time we have, and the only question is what we will do with it. Why I love my picture of Mark Brierley and why I look at it often and think about him is because Mark lived his life fully devoted to Jesus. He was fully devoted to Jesus. There are many here who knew Mark far better than I, so I don't claim to know him that deeply, although I did get to know him as a student, and I began to get to know him as a committed leader in this church who was influential in the small group ministry as well as in many individuals' lives. He thought about Jesus in the way he did his work. He thought about his workers. He thought about how he did his job. He thought about his church, and he thought about himself with Jesus at the core and the center. Jesus was not something that he added on. It was not even just something we call an integral piece that fit into the puzzle. Jesus was the puzzle for Mark. Jesus was all of it. It was permeated through all of his life, and it was so clear when you interacted with him. And what I am convinced in saying is that even though he died tragically and died young, he died with no regrets. Mark lived his life passionately in love with Jesus, and I bet you, and I will ask him when I see him, I bet you had no regrets, did you? And I bet he will say no. Because he did not put off till later what he wanted his life to be about now, and that was to be passionately committed to Jesus. He was consumed by Jesus, and for that I both honor Mark today, and I invite us to live the way Mark lived. That even though we remember on this very day he died and the tragedy and the loss that is for us, that we remember it and we think about how he lived. To decide to live this year and every year completely devoted to Jesus, having Jesus as the center around which all of our lives are conformed and transformed by. You see, that's at the heart of living. That's why, and I bet if I asked you, and I bet if you had a category of a wasted life, you could probably think of, oh, what a waste. But even though Mark died, I don't look at his life and go, what a waste. I go, it was a beautiful thing because he lived full and committed and devoted to Jesus for the days that God gave him. And he did this knowing that it's only possible because of what Jesus did in dying for us over 2,000 years ago.